it's an invite for you.
Hello. Thank you, Janet and Michael and everybody from the SI Film Festival for inviting me here to speak about the exhibition that I did at Museum Ludwig, and I was also asked to speak about my motivation to do this exhibition. So I will kind of tell you the whole story, how it came about. And Maren Hoberg and Ricardo Matos-Cabo are not here yet, but it's really thanks to them that you can see this here, because of Ricardo's enthusiasm for this film emigration and the whole work of Strasek. He came to Cologne to see the exhibition, and since then we're in conversation about this. I'm not sure if all of you are familiar with Museum Ludwig in Cologne. It's the building on the left. It's a large museum for modern and contemporary art. We have all traditional and new media in our collection, from painting to sculpture, photography, installation, and video. We also have a cinema, but we don't have a film collection. Usually in Germany, film is collected and exhibited by film museums. When we show film, and we did have retrospective exhibitions on Harun Farocki, Jonas Mekas, or Yvonne Rainer, we show it in a different way than a film museum. We look at it from either an art historical or an artistic point of view. Usually, we follow the aesthetics of the artist, of, for example, Harun Farocki, who took advantage of the exhibition space with its possibility of multi-channel installations, or Yvonne Rainer, who emphasized the relationship between the visitor's body and the moving bodies on the screen, or Jonas Mekas, who shared with us his intimate approach to avant-garde filmmaking, which has become so influential in the visual arts. When I watched a crappy DVD of Strasek's film emigration at home, it was even worse than what you saw, I was flabbergasted that something like this existed and had not been shown to the public for decades. Worse, for decades it was stored only 100 meters away from our museum at the WDR Broadcasting Archive, where it's nearly impossible to get access to when you don't know what you're looking for and who to ask. It was the summer of 2016 when I, more or less by accident, watched the 5 episodes. The images of the refugees fleeing from Germany were overlapping with the TV images of the refugees fleeing to Germany. Testimonials like Robert Biberzi's in episode 2 that we just heard about the cold-heartedness of the Swiss who refused to let the Jews in with the excuse that Switzerland isn't capable of taking in so many people sounded to me like a commentary on the Germans or other Europeans of today who use the exact same phrases towards refugees and migrants. The other thing that struck me right away was the relation of artistic or formal aspects on the one hand, political and ethical issues on the other. Both seem to be closely connected to support each other, resulting in a kind of necessity, a persuasive power that was inevitable. The way that the camera frames each emigrant is dependent on the individual that was interviewed. All of them look fantastic and in tune with their environment. As a viewer, you have the feeling to know them. And at the same time, the camera does not intrude. It keeps its distance, it remains aware of its own recording function, and passes on this awareness to the viewer. And more than that, some of the images are highly stylized. They are composed like in a Hollywood movie, almost too much for a documentary. At least one of them is definitely too much, Franz Marischka in episode 5 giving an interview sitting in his bathtub. We'll see this later. But this too much has a function. It makes you realize the fictitious character of the documentation, of any documentation and any oral history. Strasek emphasizes this by many excerpts from fiction films that treat the subject of emigration, not only but especially in episode 4. It was clear that this Strašek, whom I'd never heard of, knew what he was doing with images. These images had an ethic that was developed out of the subject, the recording of the voices, the narration of the victims. This was a political goal on its own. As far as I know, Strašek was one of the first non-Jews who was actually listening to the victims. In Germany, most of the activists of 1968 regarded fascism as an oppressive system that had put an end to the revolutionary labor movement. Maybe they were concerned with their own families, their involvement in the persecutions. But apart from very few exceptions, they weren't concerned with the experiences of the victims. Most of the initiatives of exile history were started by Jews. I was interested in the sheer information the documentation conveyed. It was clear that the names, the facts, the data were not taken from any one available source, but researched meticulously and conveyed poignantly by Strašek himself. Without knowing his handbook against cinema, then, I sensed that the author was a scientist with a strong opinion, with a mission, so to say. As I had been educated amid scientists that claim a so-called objectivity and neutrality as their highest goal, and often mark their conservatism and lacking sense of justice by doing so, I felt quite relieved that I had found this fine example of well-crafted, opinionated science. Not 1 minute of these 5 hours, Strašek says or claims something that wouldn't accord with today's state of historical knowledge. After 45 years, you can watch these 5 hours without thinking, which happens so often in the field of historical research, that they must be seen in the context of their time. This documentation of the film emigration from Nazi Germany is still valid. It could and it should be made exactly like this today. Strašek never forgets, even if he's showing painful stories, that these are the stories of those that were lucky. They can still talk. That's why he's framing his 5 hours with an excerpt of the Nazi film, The Führer Gives a City to the Jews, at the very beginning, and the mentioning of those who were murdered in concentration camps at the very end. And as he knows that the aftermath, the consequences of the escape, are part of the story, he also follows up on the careers in the country of immigration. He mentions the hunting of the communists in McCarthy's America. He examines the motives emigrants could have had to stay in the exile country or return to Germany or Austria after the war. One more point that made me walk up to our director, Yilmaz Gibior, in 2016 to propose a show on Strašek's film emigration. I could not believe that this was actually a German TV production. I knew that there were far more radical productions possible in certain German public TV stations in the 70s, and I still wonder how that was possible. But a documentary that was pushing TV aesthetics that far in the right direction fascinated me. If it had been possible before, it might be possible again. That was one motivation for representing the film emigration, to readjust the level. With the help from Strašek's friend, the author and filmmaker Johannes Behringer, I soon found out about Strašek's archive on film emigration, which had landed in the National Library in Frankfurt am Main. 2,800 files dedicated to employees and participants of the film industry are stored there, some containing a few hundred clippings and notes, some only a few pages. All of them have a cover sheet designed by Strašek containing the basic personal data in different colors, the research tools used, the family tree, pseudonyms, and symbols, which we weren't able to decode entirely. Here you have one example of this. A lot of these files also contain a 3-page questionnaire, mostly filled out by Strašek himself. These questionnaires help to standardize the research. All of the information was meant to lead to a 3-volume history and encyclopedia on film emigration, which, to the large disappointment of many, never appeared. But I didn't care about the academic results. I was taken by the precision and the profundity of the questions themselves. They differ from the questionnaires of the Biographical Dictionary of Emigres that the Institute for Zeitgeschichte in Munich published with Leo Beck Institute in 1983. Strašek was very specific in wanting to know exactly about the situation that made a person leave, the situation in which the person was received in the new country, and he also asked about the situation after 1945. For example, he asked about restitution claims and if these were settled to the satisfaction of the emigrant. Nowadays, at last, some people in Germany are aware of the fact that none of these claims were settled appropriately. But in the 70s, almost no one cared about this. On the contrary, there was a lot of hostility towards restitution claims. All of these aspects are already present in the TV series. The subject of the series became Strašek's life's work until his untimely death in 2009. He quit filmmaking to write the book that was never published. But if you're working about the film emigration, you can go to Frankfurt to study the files Strašek and his wife Karin Rausch compiled over more than 3 decades. It's still the world's largest archive of its kind, and you can rely on every piece of information you may find there. From a perspective of a museum of contemporary art, we saw Strašek's work in the context of artistic research and political activism. We were interested in the relation of scientific diligence, artistic precision, and a politically trained sense of justice and historical responsibility. That means we were less interested in the subject of film history and more in the way that this subject was represented in film, documents, and text. In other words, we were interested in Strašek's work as a production model for political science and political art. An art that, according to his early writings, denies to declare itself as art, which seems to contribute to its compelling poignancy. Straubuyer's introduction to Arnold Schönberg's accompaniment to a cinematographic scene of 1972, also a TV production and featuring Strašek, was the link to our own art collection. Kandinsky, always present as one of the heroes of modernism, is in this film revealed by Schönberg as an anti-Semite. Straub and Huyer link Schönberg's artistic output to his persecution and emigration. This short film can, not must, but can be seen as a kind of prelude to Strašek's film emigration. In the best Brechtian tradition, Straub and Huyer stress the artistic means of production, the long steady shots, the narration that is shown as quotation, the distancing artificiality, the communist viewpoint. Seen through the lens of Straubuyer's introduction, the qualities of Strašek's film emigration became more apparent. Of course, there are a lot of differences, but it would help our audience, who had most likely neither heard of Strašek nor Straubuyer, to become aware of the fabrication, the production. And you have to be aware of the production if you want to understand the product. It was clear from the start that I needed to work with an exhibition designer to present over 5 hours of film in the museum. I brought in Berlin-based artist and architect Iran Scherf, who was concerned with the issue of emigration in his own work. With Iran, we started to think about how to present the different material: films, documents, texts. It turned out that the archive with its 2,800 files was impossible to install if we wanted to stick to Strašek's ethic that every emigrant is as important as the other. We would have been forced to make a selection, but on which criteria? The most astonishing story, the most informative questionnaire, or the files with the most eye-catching clippings? The presentation would have turned the archive into something wrong. Plus, we faced legal problems concerning the personal data in the files. We decided to let the archive be what it was, a tool for research that's situated in a library. By that time, we had more than enough material to fill the 300 square meters of exhibition space. In Strašek's estate, we had discovered two of his early films that were believed to be lost, that you know by now, the Western for the SDS from 1968, which had been confiscated right after editing and therefore never been shown officially, and On the Concept of Critical Communism in Antonio Labriola from 1970. In addition to that, we exhibited his earliest film from film school, Hooray for Mrs. E., Straubuyer's Introduction, and the film Emigration. We had Strašek's text, the Handbook Against Cinema, and the issue of Film Critique, written entirely by Strašek in 1974. The essays he wrote for film magazines, and we had source material. A blank questionnaire, storyboards and scripts for the films. Iran helped to put all that material in order. We selected one document for each film, tied two of the short films together with Straubuyer's introduction in the middle. In between, Iran inserted Strašek's texts. Okay. I know this is very confusing if you look at this for the first time and you don't know the rooms, but I will lead you through. Okay, I'm showing the floor plan of the three rooms with one projection on each head wall. So the red lines are the fake walls we installed in the exhibition, and the gray walls are the existing walls. So the head walls is what I call these walls here, the walls that you see when you walk into the room. This is where the projections were. And as you can see, each room had two openings, and the two openings of the whole exhibition space could both work as entrances. The visitor could choose his or her entry into the exhibition, and he or she was confronted with a text drawing attention to this choice. Coming one direction, you walked from Strašek's first film, Hooray for Mrs. E., from 1966, towards the film Emigration from 1975. This way, you followed Strašek's development. The other entrance took you from the emigrants and refugees of the 30s towards the protest movement of 1968. This was the historical timeline. These are the two views that you were confronted with in entering the exhibition. You can easily see that they created very different spaces. The entrance of the film Emigration was open, welcoming. This is the entrance here, on the left. The one towards Hooray for Mrs. E. was narrow and led into a dead corner. This is here, and you walk in, and this is where Hooray for Mrs. E. was screened. As you see on the floor plan, there were almost no right angles in the show. The exhibition architecture created so-called vanishing lines, in German, Fluchtlinien. Flucht means escape or flight. Escape not only is one of the main subjects in Strašek's film Emigration, but also plays a role in his early films, where, for example, a quote by Pavese mentions the escape mechanisms that women had to develop in a male-dominated society. This is the quote in the Western. The walls were created by a modular panel system covered with felt. This was, on the one hand, a means to get the sound to stay in each room, but it also reflected the modular construction of the films. They have a precise rhythm generated by time units. For Iran and me, the panels also refer to the studio space in Straupillier's introduction, where Strašek and Nestler recite their texts. Straupillier's film set conveys nothing more than what it actually is, a professional sound studio where voices are recorded. The image shows the production of the sound we hear. In fact, the whole film consists of nothing but the presentation of its material, of the elements that it is made of. In Strašek's own films, you can recognize this Brechtian artificiality, and I think it's exactly here where you can recognize Straupillier's influence, which you can date back to the mid-60s when Strašek reviewed Straub's Not Reconciled for a newspaper. Right at the beginning of his handbook against cinema, Strašek quotes Brecht's call for something artificial, something staged, that is necessary in order to show reality. Iran's architecture prolonged this conception into the exhibition space. It's clearly artificial, constructed. Here the missing module refers to the construction, or the constructedness, to be precise. But also the chosen color, a pale red, very atypical for a museum space, made you aware of the situation you were in. Not a black box, not a white cube, but a different, non-determined, or maybe slightly politically determined, space which encouraged the visitors to find their own way, to choose their path, their chair, their position towards the exhibits and the exhibition as a whole. The modular architecture also allowed space for the display cases that held the material. Their practical purpose was to shed light on material in a space that needs to be dark for projection. Their look and feel alluded to the poster display cases in front of cinemas. These niches also allowed space for giveaway material. We reproduced some of Strašek's text, including the three-page questionnaire for our visitors to take home and read with concentration. It was quite an experience to discover Strašek's work and to think about how to present it to a larger audience. I'm very grateful to the many people who supported me with this endeavor. Above all, Karin Rausch, Strašek's wife and peer since 1975. I'm so sorry she can't be with us here today. And also Johannes Behringer, who has drawn attention time and again to Strašek's work, which was in danger of being forgotten. I want to close my presentation with an image of both of them from Strašek's La Briola film. Johannes in the center and Karin is on the left. Thank you very much for your attention.